Nikki and I, we're going to share a little bit of our testimony about our dating relationship, and four parts of it. We're going to share about our first impressions of each other and our initial friendship. And then we're going to talk about how we started getting interested in each other, and then what our dating relationship actually looked like. And then last part will be lessons that we've learned now, almost 8 years being married. So we have some shocking news for all of you, okay? Okay. Anyways, Nikki, the first impressions of Nikki was I just remember actually visiting U of M when I was in... It's because I look so cute, right? I visited U of M when I was a university student in Illinois. And when I visited, I remember hearing a really loud, contagious laugh. And that ended up being Nikki. And then 2 years later, I went to graduate school at Michigan. And I just realized she's just somebody who was friends with a lot of people. And she had a lot of really great friends with guys and girls. And she was one of the first people who were transformed. Her class was the first freshman batch in HMCC of Ann Arbor, 1996. And so, you know, I just got to see how her life had been changed through the church and how she was serving. I just liked how she served in church. She was very active and involved, as well as some things that we were kind of compatible with, like she was kind of outdoorsy, and I kind of like being outside and doing things, in the woods and things like that. So we had some common interests, and she's better at me than sports actually. So she could probably beat me in most sports. So one time we took a trip to Canada and we played tennis. She beat me, and she's very competitive. You have to know that about her. Okay, don't cross her. Okay.
The first time I met Pastor Andrew was, or the first time I saw him, I didn't even talk to him. I think we were at morning prayer, and we had morning prayer every day, Monday through Friday, at I think 6 in the morning at this one house we rented out. And I was praying with my, I co-led a life group at that time with his roommate, and we had finished, we met at morning prayer to pray for our life group, and then his roommate was driving me home back to my dorm, or wherever I lived at that time. And then Pastor Andrew came walking down the stairs, and his roommate said, that's Andrew. I said, oh, okay. And he said, he's my roommate. I said, yeah, okay. And he said, isn't he cute? So I said, and his roommate's kind of the type that likes to ask awkward questions. And then he said, you know, Pastor Andrew makes my lunch every day. I said, he does?
And that makes you sound really weird.
So he said, yeah, he packs me a sandwich, a ham sandwich, an apple, and juice. And I was like, now that's an interesting guy. So that was my initial, impression of him. He's an interesting guy, kind of a little bit quirky. And then at the next interaction, it was at their apartment. We had a life group dinner, and Pastor Andrew happened to be home. He was in his room studying, and he was taking Mandarin at that time. And I really like languages, so I, peeked over his shoulder, and I saw, I was genuinely interested in what he was looking at, not in him. And I said, what is that? And he just was really unfriendly. And he said, it's Mandarin. And so I thought, wow, this guy is quirky and really unfriendly. So I left the room. And then, but then as I got to know him better, we ended up being on the hospitality team together. And 1 year he was overseeing the hospitality team, and I was leading the hospitality team. So I was in charge of making sure that we collected all the things, that, like, we door stops are used to keep doors open, in the different parts of the building that we met at. And for some reason, I always forgot those. I always forgot to check. And then at the end, he would say, oh, so is everything cleaned up? I'd say, yeah, everything's cleaned up. He's like, really? I said, yeah, yeah, everything's cleaned up. He said, oh, yeah, what is this? And he would pull out a doorstop. And so I thought, this guy is like...
I was just kidding around, right?
So my first impressions, and, you know, as I got to know him, I actually didn't have the best impression of this guy.
That's where you're going to leave it off.
Oh, okay, okay. So...
No, that's fine, that's fine. But, it changed, it changed.
He wants me to share what else I wrote here. And so, but as I saw him come in, he was a grad student, and then after he graduated, he stayed in Ann Arbor to work. And so as I watched him through these years, there was nothing romantic, but I just observed him as a brother in our church, and I saw that he was genuinely, very genuine about his faith and wanting to grow and wanting to serve the church faithfully. And even in the ways that he led our hospitality team, you know, with his like new ideas of videotaping people so we could remember everyone's names, you know, but just things like that. I could tell he was just very genuine and just very wanting to do his very best for you know, in his service to God.
So, we had a, you know, pretty cordial friendship for a while, and I was interested in her for actually a long time, you know, even during that friendship, but I didn't really know, like, where to take it, so we were just friends, and we did, you know, we served together, and we got to know each other pretty well. Around 2003, that summer holiday time, I was still working and living in Michigan, and what ended up happening was, like, some weird incidents happened during that time. So what would happen was she would, like, we would talk on the phone, and it would always be, like, something about ministry, like, did you take care of this, or what do you do about this, you know, making the bulletin or something like that. But then what normally would be, like, a, you know, one-minute conversation turned into, like, a one-hour conversation, just talking about life and stuff like that, And that happened about once a month, right? So, like, from May, June, July, August, we ended up talking, you know, at least once a month, and it usually was about an hour. And it was always kind of, like, weird, you know, because for me, I'm, like, not a phone person at all. Like, if you ever talk to me on the phone, like, you're gonna think that I want to kill you or something because I'm so, like, unfriendly on the phone. But when I talked to Nikki, it's like we talked about a lot of different things, our family and things, and so even to the point of, you know, looking back, maybe some of it was a little bit, you know, crossing the line of, okay, this is getting ambiguous, you know, because we were talking and it's quite unusual. But I guess what I was thinking was I was getting more serious about approaching her and starting a relationship, but One big question I had was her calling. Was she called to be? Was she okay being marrying a pastor? And would she be open to going overseas? Because I really wanted to be a missionary. I really felt strongly that that's what God called me to do. So those are two big questions that I had, and that was an obstacle during that time as well. So
these phone conversations were really weird because really our conversations were even less than a minute. It was just, did you do this? Yes. Okay, bye. So when we talked for more than that...
That was before there was SMSing. SMSing didn't even exist. So
when we did... I hung up the phone. I remember after the first conversation, I hung up the phone and I just thought to myself... I think I said something to my one of my best friends and I said, you know what was so weird? I just talked to Andrew for more than like a minute. And then she said, really? I think it was during that summer that but even before that summer, I had been praying through different things, you know, things that I really felt like God was asking me to surrender. And so during this, after these phone conversations, it's really started making me think, uh-oh, you know, for me, the big obstacle was, he's a pastor, right? And to be honest, I did not want to marry a pastor. But let me explain why. It's because my parents, ever since I started university, they started noticing, you know, a change in my life. I started becoming, you know, very, like, more serious about my faith. They've never seen this before. And then they were getting a little bit worried, even though they're Christians themselves. And they after when I came back for like a holiday one time, they said, "You know, Nikki, you know, going to church is good, but don't ever bring a pastor or a missionary through those front doors." And I said, "Don't worry, I'm not going to." That was my first semester, you know. And then every holiday after that, every like several months, they would remind me. They said, "You know, never bring a pastor or a missionary through those front doors." I said, "I know." And so when I started sensing that maybe he's interested, and I myself was, you know, getting interested, it started to scare me, because I realized, oh no, I have this big like conflict, right? Like to disobey my parents, and then, you know, what's my heart telling me? And then also during this time, there were some other guys that were, you know, saying, "Oh, let's go out, you know, let's go out for lunch, or let's go out for coffee." And so I would talk with my mentor at that time. Christina is Pastor Seth's wife. And so I was telling her, I was like, "What should I do? This like guy randomly called me, you know, and asked." And so I'm thankful for her advice now, you know, and she said, "You know, if you don't really know him and you're not really interested in him, there's not really any point in going out for coffee or going out to lunch with him." And so, yeah, I took her advice, and but it was during that time where I really had to like struggle with figure out what my feelings were towards him and how I felt about him being a pastor.
For me, by the end of that summer, I was like ready to approach Nikki, you know, and I told Pastor Seth, who was my mentor at the time and very influential in my life. It's like, Pastor Seth, I think I'm going to approach her, right? And so, but he said, just wait, because there were some things that she needed to kind of work through, you know? And he didn't say it in those many words. He just said, wait, right? And so what I ended up doing was, because we had already kind of like delved into like a deeper friendship already, I didn't want to perpetuate that if I wasn't ready or if she wasn't ready for it. So I decided to kind of not be in contact with her for that fall. So that fall semester from like September through December, we only just talked like casually, like just in passing, and usually just about ministry or business or something, you know. But otherwise, I didn't really talk to her, and I just tried to pray for it. And you know, I did know, well, the thing about it was, I didn't know if she was interested in me or not. I just knew that I liked talking to her, and she's nice to a lot of guys, and also a lot of guys were interested. I knew a lot of guys that were interested in her, and I didn't know if it was like just me or what. So I didn't know. And then finally, you know, after like around December of that year, Pastor said, I was talking to him, and he said, you know, if you're going to do it, just do it. And he didn't. So one thing I appreciated about him was he didn't tell me whether she liked me or not. He just let me take the risk. If I was going to do it, I just needed to take a risk and do it. And I didn't know it at the time either, but behind the scenes, he and Christina had been walking through some things with Nikki as well. So that whole time of waiting was for her to allow God to work in her and for her to figure things out. I didn't know it at that time, and you know, so I just had to trust Pastor Seth and just kind of trust in his guidance and counsel. So it was I gotta tell people, that was like a rough period of life, like, you know, so much tension in my heart, you know, and also like, wait, does that guy like her? You know, all those kind of questions like that. So not very fun for me.
Well, for me, there was also a lot of tension during that time, because I was personally struggling a lot with, you know, I was just praying a lot, and I shed a lot of tears while praying, because I was like saying, I don't want to marry a pastor, but I like him, so what should I do? And then I finally came to a point where I was really able to say, tell God, you know, I will really go wherever you go. I'll do whatever you do, or what you want me to do. And I came to a point where I was very surrendered after lots of prayers. And that was when I just said, you know, I don't know if he likes me, but if he approaches me, then I would be ready to say yes. So I'm very thankful that Pastor Seth had told Andrew to, because he knew where I was in you know, what I was thinking. So I'm just very thankful that he told Pastor Andrew to wait, because I think if Pastor Andrew had asked me earlier, I think I would have been not clear with, you know, my own convictions.
So going into, like, our dating relationship now until our wedding day, the first time I ever met Nikki's parents was later that we met really quickly. I think I approached her February 2004. I met her parents in March 2004. And we met, I remember, because we met at this seafood restaurant. I was so nervous. And, you know, her mom can be really, her parents are really intimidating if you don't know them. Now that I know them, they're, like, you know, really weird and quirky and funny. But they're so intimidating, you know. And I just remember being so nervous and them telling me, we like you as a person, but we don't like you as that you're a pastor or a missionary. And so you can't date our daughter, right? And then I went home, and I got really sick. So I think I thought that maybe her parents had poisoned the food or something, because I got really sick after that. So actually, when I had approached her, I was thinking in my mind that I had a timeline of a year and a half. I wanted to get married within a year and a half of when I approached her, but that was actually longer. It took about 20 months, actually, for the whole process, because it took a long time for about a year and a half for us to get her parents' blessing in the relationship. So we slowed it down a lot until that happened.
And during that time, I had lots of fights with my parents, and there was so much tension every time I went home that I actually didn't want to go home anymore. And my sister would call me and she would say, "You're breaking up our family, and Mom calls me every day talking about you and how worried she is." And she said, "Just, you know, listen to Mom and Dad." And also, because I was a grad student at that time, and so I just decided, I think it's better if I just cut myself off financially from them. And so at that time, I wasn't making enough money to pay rent and to, you know, pay for, yeah, living expenses. So I had to ask my friend, you know, "Can I borrow this large sum of money so that I can live for the next who knows how long until my, you know, until I can support myself?" And I had a really good friend who was very, you know, gracious and was able to lend me that money. And that just kind of, like, I think it spoke to my parents just about how I wanted to grow up. I wanted to be, you know, I really had my own, you know, convictions. And during that time, my mom actually got malaria, and she traveled to a different country, and she came back. And I think it was, you know, God's weird sovereignty in that way, because I was the only, I'm the youngest of three, and I was the only one who was able to go and stay at the hospital with my mom. And I think that just really spoke volumes to her, you know, just about how much I love her, even though I'm not obeying, you know, what she's telling me to do. And so that just really showed her, you know, how much I cared for her. And so during that time, I think, you know, I know God was working in my parents' lives. And especially my mom, because one time we had lunch and my mom said, "Oh, I decided to sell one of my businesses." And I said, "Oh, okay." And she said, "I felt like God was telling me to become more involved in, you know, in serving in the women's ministry in our church." I thought, "He did? You are?" And then my dad leans over and he says, "I think your mom's finally growing." So I think during that 20 months, God was really working in my parents' hearts, you know, and really helping them to grow spiritually and challenging them to really let go of me and surrender me.
Mm-hmm. I guess one other thing in our dating relationship before our wedding was, because our relationship ended up being much longer, we had to go much slower in how we related with each other. So, for example, I was in seminary, so I was going back and forth from Chicago to Michigan, which is about a five-hour train ride. And so I would only see her on the weekends, but we made a commitment until like her parents come around, we're only going to do something together every other week. So when we dated, we only did stuff every other week, and usually, like, I was exhausted by that point, and, you know, but it was always, like, something to look forward to. But I'm thankful that we were able to kind of take it slow, especially in the beginning, until that wedding day got a lot closer. And just trying to keep some boundaries that we set, not just frequency of when we got together, but also, you know, boundaries that we set physically and those kinds of things, emotional boundaries, just making sure that we're, you know, involved with other things and being faithful in our ministries and for me in my studies and with our families. And so even though it was like a long period of time and with regular temptations, you know, we're human beings, there's regular temptations that we had, but still seeing God kind of bring us together. So you want to share reflections or you want to share? No, you can share first.
Okay. So the first year of marriage.
This is reflections after 8 years of marriage.
So our first year of marriage was really horrible. So I remember we got married in December, and come like March or April, I remember thinking, is it written somewhere in the Bible that you can get divorced after only being married for 3 or 4 months? And I said, because I don't know if I made the right decision. just because we had gotten into some big conflicts, you know, that we felt like was, or that I was just really, you know, hurt by or disappointed by. And since then, we've learned, you know, I've changed a lot in, like, how I resolve conflict, you know, and I used to be much more like passive aggressive and not tell him and expect him to know what I was thinking, and you know, and so since then it's we've definitely improved over the 8 years, but yeah, I mean, marriage is it's challenged me a lot in giving grace, in forgiving, being patient, being wise with my words, or holding my tongue, you know, when I want to say something, but I know I shouldn't say it. And so I think that, that marriage has been definitely a growing experience, an experience that has made me more like Christ.
Yeah, for me, the two lessons for me, the first one is that marriage is a lot harder than I expected it to be. You know, for me, yeah, I thought, okay, I'm a pastor. I've led different things in church, so I thought it'd be easy to, you know, lead my wife spiritually. It'd be easy to pray together and read our Bibles together. But that's actually been so hard to do, you know. And it's actually a lot harder than I expected. Like, when we first tried to pray together, I led our prayer time like how I lead prayer meetings in church, right? They're like, okay, let's pray for this, Nikki. We pray. Then, okay, now let's pray for this, Nikki. And then after like a couple times of doing that, like Nikki just kind of just said, stop. Can we not pray like that? Because we're like, it's just two of us, right? So we can like pray a little bit more like together, right? So I was like, oh yeah, okay, that's right. And I just realized it's just so hard because not just on those kinds of things, but just the level of depth of relationship that you have to be in. And I realize I'm not as relational and that I thought I was. And so it's a lot harder to just be like, you know, totally like vulnerable and honest and open and communicate well. It's just really hard to do that in marriage. The second lesson for me is just I realized that Nikki is not the same person that I married 8 years ago. And I think what's happened is we both change over the years. And I think by God's grace, I mean, hopefully I've changed, but I've also been able to see her change so that even though I thought she was a great woman of God when we got married, what I've seen is that she's kind of surpassed those expectations in our 7+ years of marriage. Just how I see her as a mom, like she does stuff that I can't do, like how she's so patient with our kids and she teaches them like the alphabet and counting. And I'm like, I can't do that. You know, I thought I was a pretty patient and good at that stuff, but I'm horrible at it. And for her, like, I just see her excel in these different ways that I didn't know. I didn't even know that. It's not like I foresaw who she was and, You know, and it's just, she's become, she's grown and she's changed. And I think that's something that I didn't really count on. You know, I didn't really expect that we would both change like that. So,
Obviously, I've learned more about Pastor Andrew since we've got married. And even though I've learned about, you know, his weaknesses, his flaws, I've also seen, you know, his strengths. And I can say I definitely admire him more now than I did at the beginning of our marriage. And, you know, at the beginning of marriage, you're like, goo goo gaga, and everything is perfect. And so, but yeah, I've learned that, you know, he's a lot smarter than I thought. Not that I thought he wasn't smart, but I'm like, he's surprised me over the years, like, wow, you're really, And then he's a better preacher than I thought. Like, in the beginning, I thought, yeah, his preaching is decent. But then now I'm, like, really blessed by his sermons. And so I think he's improved a lot. And, you know, I knew he was quirky before, which I liked. But then I like it even more now because I see how it enhances his parenting skills and how, like, the kids just are doubled over in laughter because he's so strange sometimes, you know? And I just sit back. I'm not really like that. And so I sit back and I just watch this and, you know, am amused by the whole scene. And so, so I've learned a lot and I've been so blessed, you know, through our 8 years of ups and downs.
Thanks, Dickie. Okay. All right. Well, hopefully that will, you know, every relationship is different and people are different, but at least hopefully it could bring some color to just what relationships are like. And like I said, we've had our ups and downs, and there are many more to come in our relationship together. But at the same time, God always shows himself faithful. And even for us here, you know, we want to at least give you some example of what a relationship looks like. Last week, we talked about two principles, the first two principles about relationships. First, relationships should have the end goal of marriage. And second, relationships need to maintain a healthy pace towards marriage. This week, we're going to go over the last two principles about relationships. So first, relationships require a high level of maturity in both persons. And four, relationships should involve the church community. So these are two general principles that I'm going to expound upon, okay? We also had an open FAQ session, so we're going to have the same thing after today's seminar. The only difference this week is if our kids are okay, Nikki will also stick around for the Q&A. So if you have any questions specifically for her, you can direct it to her, and if she's still around, she'll try to answer it, okay? I think you can WhatsApp or message Tina, right? Is Tina here? She's hiding behind the column, okay? So you can SMS or WhatsApp your questions to that number. If you don't have Tina's number, it's up there. And it's up there on every single slide, so, okay? So here's principle number three. Number three is relationships require a high level of maturity in both persons. So splitting this up into two parts. First, it is important to begin addressing personal heart issues before getting into relationships. Okay, maturity really is this. It equals godly manhood or womanhood, okay, which basically equates to Christ-likeness. So I didn't plan it. I'm not smart enough to plan our preaching schedules with these kinds of seminars, but I think it's worked out in God's timing that we have this, you know, true manhood and true womanhood sermons, and then we're talking about relationships, because really maturity is that Christ likeness where men and women are becoming more like Christ. Galatians 5:22-24 says, "But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things there is no law. And those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires." So this fruit comes after crucifying the flesh and walking in the Spirit for stretches of time. Okay, so it's this kind of longevity of walking with Jesus and a longevity of fighting and putting to death the sinful nature in our lives. So before any Christ-honoring relationship, there really should be a track record of obedience. That's why, you know, I don't tell people, like, there's no hard and fast rule for students, okay? In the student seminar, I did not say, if you are a university student, then you cannot date. I don't give that kind of, like, rule like that or law like that. But what I do say for most, you know, students, and you guys have all been there before, is that as students, we're pretty immature, right? I mean, I don't know about you. I think you guys are a lot more mature than when I was a student in university. But, like, man, I was like, I didn't take care of my room. You know, I couldn't make it to class on time. You know, just basic human being stuff I just didn't know how to do, you know? That's like, it's terrible. But, you know, as I matured and went through things in my life that were humbling, that were refining, it brought about a track record of obedience that was helpful for me, okay? It's kind of like a mango tree. I'm so excited this year because we have a mango tree in our house. You know how it hadn't rained here for like 2 months? It hadn't rained at all, so like our grass was drying out and, you know, like it's just really dry and all our plants were dying because we never water our plants. And so, but we have this mango tree that was just remained green. And the reason why it remained green is because this is a pretty mature tree. It's been there, I don't know, before we were there, and it's probably been there for maybe 10, 15 years at least, and it's pretty big. It's because even when it doesn't rain for 2 months, the roots are so deep that it's still getting water. It's still getting nourishment. And so when those seasons come, when it's, like, dry, it's okay. So now the reason why I'm so excited is that mango tree has, like, 30 or 40 mangoes on it, and we're just, like, waiting for the mangoes to... Hopefully bats don't eat it and stuff, and we figure out how to pick them because they're so high. But once it happens, I'm so excited. So good fruit comes from good roots, right? Good fruit comes from good roots, just like that, just like my mango tree. Remember that. So also, emotional health is a key factor on the path towards maturity. For example, how do we handle conflicts? Emotionally healthy and emotionally mature people will be able to handle conflicts in a healthy way. Well, before, when I was younger, I don't think I handled conflicts at all because I just avoided conflicts. If, like many families, my family, when we had a conflict, we swept it under the carpet, right? We just tried to ignore it. So now when I got into, let's say, with my relationship with my wife, we didn't have that many fights dating because we just didn't see each other often enough to, like, get into any fights. But when we got married, like she said, that first year of marriage, we got into so many fights and some very big fights. And looking back now, one of the things that I was terrible at was just managing my emotions. And so when something would come up, I would get really sarcastic. Right? That's just who I am. I'm pretty sarcastic person in my flesh. And so I'll just say sarcastic comments in response to what she said. And then I would say stuff like, whatever, right? Or forget about it. Or I don't care. You know, those kinds of things where because I didn't know how to handle the conflict well and I wasn't emotionally mature enough to handle a conflict, it just kind of added fuel to the fire in a negative way. Where the conflicts didn't get resolved. And so over that course of that year, it just kind of piled up. Now, for most of us, you're probably like me, and handling conflicts is something like we're not really used to learning how to do. And so we get into conflicts with our family, with our parents, with our siblings, with people at work, and some of us, we just kind of lose it altogether. Our tempers get the best of us, or we make irrational decisions because our emotions get the best of us. And so really, emotional health is a key factor on the path towards maturity. One of the books that I found really helpful is called Emotionally Healthy Spirituality by Peter Scarzero. What he says is for many Christians, the block that they hit, the wall that they hit in their maturity is because they are emotionally unhealthy. Because of bad relationships with their families, because of unresolved conflicts, because of just the history and the baggage that they carry. Those are the things that are under the iceberg that people don't deal with, and that's what people carry into relationships. In a marriage relationship, when you carry a lot of baggage into it, there's going to be a lot of fireworks and a lot of like friction. Okay, so a lot of the emotional health and maturity has to begin before you're married. You don't have to be perfect, okay? It's not like you have to figure out everything. You have to be 100% self-actualized and stuff like that. But you do have to begin working on those things. Like, you have to be aware of some of those root issues that are in you, okay? If you're still at the point where, like this young girl, this young woman, who when she got baptized, she said this. Literally, she said, "I have no issues." I was like, "Girl, you have issues." When you say you don't have issues, right? And so the thing is we have to begin realizing we have issues and begin to address it. We don't, like I said, we don't have to be a finished product, but we have to be aware of those things in our hearts. That's a foundation of radical discipleship, isn't it? It's strengthening our identities in Christ and internalizing the gospel. We have to really be aware of that. That's why I think part of maturity is going through transitions in your life. So if you remember your transition from university to working life, that was a huge transition, right? Because you're used to a certain way of life. You have an identity with your classmates, with your dorm mates, with church people. You have an identity in that sphere. You were able to figure out, this is when I have my quiet times. This is how I relate to God. I have a lot of free time where I could spend with life group members. But then when you start working, a lot of those things get kind of like tossed up in the air and get all mixed up, right? You realize you don't have the same kind of time to spend with God. You have a different, people don't know you at the workplace, so you're trying to establish your identity and establish who you are. You have money now to spend on stuff that you didn't have money to spend on before, you know, clothes and cars and gadgets and all this stuff. And so we have to figure out in this transition who you are and who you are in Christ. And what is the gospel when you face failure, when you face conflict at work and politics, or you mess up on something royally? How do you handle that kind of stuff? It's really important. For me, I have a bent towards depression. I've never gotten clinically, you know, diagnosed as depressed or anything like that. But really, when I was a younger man, depression really controlled me. So that I wouldn't be able to, like, get out of bed. So I would sleep until, like, noon. And then I would, like, not go to class. I kind of putz around campus and, you know, sleep random places. Like, I would literally sleep in the cafeteria. Like, I just pull up three chairs, lie down there. Then people were like, "Is this guy homeless? Who is this person? Does he need help?" And, you know, I would just, you know, I just was, it was a very bad, unhealthy cycle. And then as I grew spiritually by the grace of God, I was able to kind of grow out of it, you know. But still, I still have that predisposition inside me. So when I get discouraged, ministry, you know, Sunday celebration was terrible, or somebody's frustrating me, and, you know, and I bring that into my family, I'm thankful because I'm at least able to work that out so that it doesn't affect my family so much. It doesn't affect my relationship with my kids. It's not a detriment in my relationship with my wife. So that's like the emotional health that you need to be working towards, okay? Number three, have you and your perspective demonstrated this kind of time-tested faith in Christ? This testing, like I said, happens when a person moves from one life stage to the other, like from student life to working life. From one job to another job, or from one location, moving from U.S. or Australia or somewhere in North America, and then repatriating back into the U.S. And that transition is a good test of where we are in our maturity. Okay? I really think that the transition into working life is an excellent test for you. It's hard, isn't it? Because you don't have the same time flexibility. You seem busier. You know, there's a lot of stuff that happens at work. You're tired all the time. You don't have the strength to go to life group. Sometimes you don't feel like doing certain things. You have family obligations. Your parents are pressuring you to get married or not to get married or to get married to the right person or to somebody else, and all these kinds of things that are going on. That is a great test for our faith. And I'll tell you this, it's doable. Some of you guys, you're struggling a lot because you're like, man, work, I'm working like 70 hours a week, 80 hours a week, and then I have to go through traffic, and then my life group leader expects me to go to life group and have LCG and then go to church on Sunday and then serve on ministry teams, and I have family obligations, and I have to drive my parents to these places and do these things. Those tests are good, and by God's grace, it is doable to pass the tests, okay, and to have your faith intact and for you to be faithful. It's kind of like coal. You know how coal is produced? How something that it can be used as fuel? It's produced with two things, okay? It's produced by time. Like, I don't know what your beliefs are on, like, creationism and things like that, so I won't go into, like, whether it's millions of years or what, okay? I don't know. I'm not an expert in coal, okay? But it is time, length of time, and then also it's pressure. Pressure for a long time produces coal. And coal, when you burn it, is really useful fuel, right? In our maturity, in our growth, there's two things that help. It's time and pressure. And that's why, like, a lot of times, you know, I have gotten this reputation that I'm, when I was back in the U.S., you know, I was the pastor that you don't want to talk to when you're thinking about a relationship. You know why? Because I always told them, I said, why don't you try the test of time? Just wait. Right? People hated that answer, right? They're like, Pastor, I'm ready to date this girl. Let's wait. And just go through the test of time. Because, you know, in 6 months, if you still have the same feelings for her, then okay, maybe you're like, that's like a real feeling. If in 6 months you're not interested in her anymore, you're moving on to the next person, then thank goodness you didn't delve into it. That's the test of time, right? But the way that your faith gets refined is through time and pressure. Okay? Just imagine how attractive you'll be after you go through iterations of this, right? Iterations of time, and you might like get white hair, or you might like look a little bit like more like worried and stuff. But like, imagine how attractive your character will be when it is the right time, when it is God's timing for you to start a relationship and get married. That time and pressure is irreplaceable in building your character. B, so this is the second sub-principle, is that it is important to have some direction in key areas of life before entering into a relationship. So not just your character, but also having some direction in very practical areas of your lives. Okay. So, number one, do you and your perspective have some overall direction in your lives? Ephesians 5:15-17 says, look carefully then how you walk. Not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. We may not know everything, okay? But it is helpful to have some direction, whether it's short-term or long-term, okay? Like I tell people this all the time. Many times we want to know what we're going to be doing 50 years from now. And really, for most cases, I can't say all because God can do anything that he wants, but for most cases, we're not going to know what we're going to be doing 50 years from now. I usually crash people's expectations when they're students and they're like, Pastor, what am I going to major in? Because I'm going to be doing this the rest of my life. I usually break it to them. Sorry, you know, even what you study in your major, probably not going to do it. Not even write your first job, you're not going to do, right? Most of you, that's what we did, right? We still stressed out so much about our major when now we're like, well, that wasn't even my job. I don't do that right now, right? We may not know our everything, but we should have some direction in our lives. So, for example, what career path is God guiding you towards? Is there a specific geographic or lifestyle conviction that you have? Even in the short run, right, are there certain things that God is leading you towards, because that will help determine whether you can go into a relationship or not. I talk to some people, and this happens more often than it should, but you know, they say, you know, I'm ready to go into a relationship, and they're like, and I'm going to be moving for the next 4 years. I'm going to start a graduate program in this place. I'm like, so how are you going to start a relationship with this person realistically when you're not going to even be physically on the same continent for the next 4 years? And you're going to, like, this experience of graduate school or whatever is going to be so formative for you that how can you even know what's going to happen, right? And And so those are the questions that we need to kind of wrestle with. It's kind of like going on a trip without any plan, right? I hope that you never do that. Like for me, when you go on a trip, like you're going to have at least some idea, okay? You might not know exactly where you're going to stop to eat. You might not know exactly the places that you're going to visit. But you better know like the general location, right? You never just go to the airport like, hey, where am I going to go, right? No, at least you're going to be like, I'm going to go to Jogja. I'm going to go to Bali. I'm going to go to Hawaii or something like that. And then when you get there, you're like, okay, well, what am I going to do here now? Well, I'm going to go visit this place, and I'm going to whatever, climb the bikes up the volcano, and you know, and then you'll figure it out, you know? You're not going to have every... Some of us, we're like going to plan out every single moment and every single stop, but for most of us, just the general plan is good, right? And so before entering into a relationship, both you and the person that you're thinking about should have some general direction, okay? Also with this, are you and your perspective financially on course to be self-sustaining? Now we're getting ultra practical here, okay? Because you have to consider some issues here about money. What are your spending habits? Are you in debt? Do you have family obligations financially? Are you saving? Are you budgeting? Is your spouse, do they have, is that prospective girlfriend or boyfriend, how's their spending habits? Like when they're lonely, do they just spend lots of money, right? Are they in debt? What are the family obligations that they have? What are they saving towards? Do they budget? Like these are the very practical things. One of the things that we must know is that one of the top reasons for divorce are because of financial stresses and financial reasons. And a lot of it's just what seems to be harmless in the beginning, but ends up causing a lot of stress and tension in relationships. For example, if like one of you is in a lot of debt, like student loans or credit card loans, that puts a lot of pressure when you come together, right? Because now you're sharing that pressure together. If you support your family for a certain thing and you're obligated to support them with that, your potential spouse better know that that's where some of your money goes, okay? It's really important that you kind of bring those two together. Especially for the men, this is the responsibility of starting your own household. Are you in a place, you might not be like fully there, but are you on course to be able to support your family by yourself? Are you able to do that? That's why it does take some time for somebody to maybe get established in their career and to have some money saved up and to be wise with their finances so that they can have that in mind. I think just especially in an Indonesian context, I think that's why as single adults, some of us need to begin and establish healthy boundaries with our parents, especially financially. I know that there's some like family tradition and your parents might get insulted by certain things, but I think in your wisdom and by this, according to your decision making, there should be some things that you have to be thinking about financially that you have to talk about with your parents. For example, if their decisions will affect your financial position later on, then you better talk to them about it. Okay? For example, like my parents are Asian. I think that's obvious, right? My parents are Asian. So one of the things that they did was, you know, when I started work, they said, okay, we're gonna get you a car. I said, okay, that's, you know, I was like, I don't know, but okay, that's fine. Get me a car. That's fine. So they got me a car. But do you know what I had to do? I had to pay for the car, right? So they purchased it and initially got it, and they drove it up to where I live. But then I had to pay for it. I had to do the monthly payments, okay? And so here's what I have to pay now, but it was my parents' decision for them to get that car for me, right? And so now I'm bearing that responsibility. Now there's other, that's kind of small. Not that small, but there's other things that you guys are obligated to with family, some of you, that you have to be really clear to establish boundaries, okay? Another example for me and Nikki was, you know, we had to, you know, being a pastor, I knew that we would have to live, we wouldn't have a lot of disposable income, okay? And so things like vacations, sometimes we would have to abstain from some trips that our family members wanted to go on. because, you know, we didn't want to just have them cover it, but also we couldn't afford it. And so we had to make those kinds of difficult decisions. And we couldn't be like, we couldn't get into debt because of a family vacation. Does that make sense? And so those are the kinds of things that you have to think about right now, because I know that there's a lot of those ties, right? And you have to work that out with your parents. Three, decide to maximize whatever life stage you are in right now. I think too often people just put their lives on hold until they get married, and because they're so fixated that marriage is the beginning of life, real life, when that's not really the case. I got married. I didn't get married till I was 31 years old, and I think that's kind of old, you know. I wouldn't recommend that. I'm not making that like the standard in our church. But I actually think that I got to do a lot in my 20s that I perhaps wouldn't have been able to do if I'd gotten married earlier. Okay, and I'm not saying marriage is better or worse than being single. All I'm saying is I got to do some things that I wouldn't have been able to do when I was single. I got to travel to a lot of different places around the world. Kazakhstan, China, Cambodia, Thailand, Kenya, all these places, because every summer I was free, you know, to travel and to do those things. And that really formed a lot of the vision for missions in my life. I was able to do a ton of ministry because when I got home from work, you know what I did? I just met with tons of people, hung out with them. You know, people slept over, or I slept over at people's houses. I slept in the office because I would just be working there, taking care of things. And then it'd be so late, I'd just crash and wake up the next morning for morning prayer. So, like, there was so much that I was able to do being single. And, I mean, it's not like I loved it, okay? Like, sometimes I was pretty miserable. And, you know, there's all this tension because I like a girl and I don't know if they like me back, all this stuff. But looking back, it was really a very unique season of my life. And it is an opportunity for us to develop that Christ-like character. It is an opportunity to develop practical areas of life skills. For myself, that's where I learned, you know, I had all this time, right? And so I, like, learned how to do my finances. So I got, have you seen those For Dummies books? I got this personal finances for dummies, and I learned about, you know, investing and, you know, those kinds of things that I don't know if I would have had time, but I learned how to do it as a single person so that when I did get married, I had some savings and I was taking care of those kinds of things, right? I tried to learn how to do, like, you know, web programming and all this stuff that I would have never had time to do. I got into bird watching and interesting hobbies. And it's just, you know, that's how I developed to be more like Christ, right? So what are you called to be doing right now? Do it, maximize it. Do it full tilt in your workplace, in church ministry, with your families. Just go all out and do it. Make the most of it. Learn new hobbies. Gain new skills. Do things that you will help you develop as a person and to grow spiritually. I'm so thankful for times that I had to pray, like go to morning prayer. You know, I've kind of tossed around the idea of morning prayer for our church. I really want to start it someday, okay? But right now in my stage of life, and I was telling tell our ET, you know, if we were to start morning prayer, I don't think I would be able to go. Why? Because my kids, right? I have kids that they're awake by, you know, we have to get them out of bed by 5:45. They have to go to school by 6, or not 6, by 7. They have to be out the door by like 6:30 or 6:40. And so morning prayer is kind of out of the question for me right now. But I'm so thankful that habit and that practice God instilled in me when I was single. And because that helps me in my spiritual life now. Now I take advantage of any opportunity. It's almost like second nature. If I have some free time, I'm praying. If it's early in the morning, I pray. So it's weird, but being trained that way as a very unspiritual person, God's kind of formed me in this way as a person. So make the most of your singlehood. Okay, make the most of your calling now as a single person. There's so much that you can do. I won't go so far to say, I wish I was in your shoes. But, yeah, you guys can do a lot of great things. Here's some frequently asked questions. Okay, two questions. First, is it okay to have a list of things that you're looking for in a spouse? I say yes and no. Yes and no. Depends on what's on that list, okay? So it's yes if you're developing your core God-given biblical values and convictions, okay? That doesn't have to be a lot, okay? But what are your convictions? What are the values that you have? Because if when you match up with somebody, they better have those values and convictions as well. If you have those similar core beliefs, then you're going to go a long way, okay? That's going to be what bonds you together. And so, for example, with me and Nikki, I had very few deal breakers, okay? Like my friends, from my high school friends, I had a high school reunion, my 10-year reunion. They're like laughed at me because they're like, you've never had a girlfriend before. What's wrong with you, right? And so, like, I've never had that problem before. But one deal breaker I had was she had to be committed to missions, period. If you weren't committed to missions, you weren't, you know, I'm not even going to consider. So for Nikki, she was open to it, but I wasn't sure. And so as God was working on her, that was one of the big deal breakers, conviction that I had, because that was a conviction for me, okay? So developing your core God-given biblical values and convictions. On the other hand, it's no, because don't treat it like a shopping list. Some of us, we have like 20 different things, and we're like a consumer, like we're going shopping for a spouse. We're like, well, what do we want? They need to be this hot, this tall. They need to have this shade of skin. They need to have this kind of job. They need to be dressing this kind of way. And like, I think that kind of consumer mindset really has to die in us, okay? Because this is the thing about marriage. Marriage is about dying, okay? Marriage is about, like, you put your own preferences down and you serve somebody, right? And once you get married, you're... Are you okay? Okay.
It's all about me,
Pastor. Yeah. Marriage... I have to say it again. Marriage is about dying to yourself. Because when it comes down to when you're married with somebody, you're not going to always get what you want. Okay? And that person will change. Okay? They'll change for the better and they will change for the worse. And if you're just picking and choosing the values that you want, the things that you like, it's going to change. And you're going to realize it's pretty superficial to be basing that on, like, such a superficial thing, okay? Remember that your marriage will be full of discovery and full of changes. You're not going to be the same person, and your spouse will not be the same person on day one of your marriage and day 1,000 and day 10,000. You'll be completely different people, okay? Second question that I came up with was, how do you know when you're ready for a relationship then? How do you know when you're ready? Besides all the things that I shared before, what I want to emphasize is you don't have to be a finished product, okay? It's not like you have to have all these things in 100% order before you can get married. Otherwise, we'll never get married, right? Well, I'll be like old. I still need to work. I have to be more Christ-like. That will never end, okay, in your lifetime. So if you're going to wait, then you're going to die, and there's going to be no need for a spouse anyways, okay? But I think making progress is important, and you're time-tested, okay? That's why it's really helpful to go through those seasons of your life when you're tested. You also have to consider that other person as well. You may be, like, ready to go, like, you're like, rrr, 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 like, you're like, ready to go, okay? But if that other person's, like, still, like, kind of going up to the starting line, they're not ready, then you're getting all worked up for nothing, number one, and that person is just going to ruin it for that other person. And that's actually part of a relationship that we have to understand is it's not just about me, right? It's about that other person, too, and if they're ready, okay? Lastly, practically speaking, start with the end in mind. Remember this. It's like a project that you're planning out. The end goal, which is not the end goal, but it is an end goal, is marriage, okay? And then work your way backwards. If realistically you're like, well, you know, in 1.5, I recommend 1.5 to 2 years is a good time for a relationship, you know, just from start to marriage. If, like, you realize 1.5, 2 years, it's not going to happen like that. It's going to take maybe 4 years or 6 years or 10 years. I don't know how you can plan your life 10 years ahead of time. And you're like, well, maybe you should just hold off because it might not be the right time. Okay, and so you have to know when you're ready and when you have to know, you have to think about the end always, okay, and work your way backwards. Here's the last principle, number four. Relationships should involve the church community. Relationships should involve the church community. Here's a sub-point is, healthy interdependence is fostered in biblical community. Healthy interdependence is fostered in biblical community. What does a relationship heading towards marriage look like? I'm going to give you the verse, all right? This is it, about love. 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 7 and 11. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. And then verse 11, when I was a child, I spoke like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put childish ways. I gave up childish ways. What he's saying here is the mark of true maturity is how you love. Okay, how you love people. How is this kind of love cultivated then? Is it by like having many, like going on many dates and having many romantic relationships? No. How it is cultivated is through biblical community, where you learn how to love people that are unlovable. That person in your life group that you just can't stand. Not that you're going to date that person or you're going to marry that person, but can you just love that person like Christ would love them? Can you be patient with them? Can you speak kindly to them? Can you forgive them for wrong that they've done? That's how you build that kind of love, is through loving one another, investing, building each other's faith up, and just enjoying life together, right? That's life group, L-I-F-E, right? Love, investment, faith, enjoyment. In biblical community, you learn how to love. Okay, that's why it's great when you can't stand people in your life group. Because that's how you grow. That's how you grow, okay? I mean, I think about it for myself. Nikki kind of touched upon it, okay? How did this guy, socially awkward, introverted, not very friendly, insecure person like me, okay? How did I learn like how to be a servant? How did I learn how to talk to people? How did I learn how to share and be vulnerable? How did I learn how to do that? It was just by being in life group. I think about it. How did I learn how to come home? You know, you guys have all been in that situation where I'm coming home from work and I had a 1-hour commute to drive and I'm thinking, I have 3 hours before I need to sleep. What do I need to do? And all I want to do on that drive is I want to go home and eat something and take a long nap, right? Maybe watch some TV and that's it. Have you guys felt like that before? And then I come home and there's life group. So I have to like, you know, deny myself of that desire and go to life group. Or deny that desire and cook food for somebody and have, you know, this dorky freshman over who doesn't even appreciate anything. And sit with him and talk with him about, you know, Pokemon or something, right? That's how I learn how to serve, okay? How do young men learn how to lead at home? Through leading and practicing leadership in the church. That doesn't mean you have to have the title of a leader, but that does mean that you should be exhibiting some initiative and responsibility in the church and in other areas of your life. Because that's how you're going to practice leadership at home. It's not like all of a sudden like you're going to get this rush of anointing to be able to lead your families, even though you've never done it before in your life. That's how you do it. You practice at church. There are two different ways that marriage relationships can go, okay? Or just relationships in general. Nikki, can you do this with me? Okay. You guys are getting a sneak preview of our premarital counseling. I would do that with JJ, but that would be weird. So, okay? No, you don't need that. Okay, the first kind of relationship is a codependent relationship. It's like an A, like this. Okay. Yeah, it looks cute, okay? But it is undesirable, okay? Because there's no way that two people who are leaning like this can stand on their own, okay? And so they do everything together. They wear the same clothes. They, you know, like mentioning, like, you know, I love her, he loves me, like all the weird stuff. Or, and then, like, they just do everything together, right? And their identity, their value, their energy, they do everything together, okay? In many ways, that's unhealthy. The next relationship is like this, okay? This is an H, okay? Where I'm doing my own thing, she's doing her own thing, and we just touch every once in a while, like a business meeting, right? How's it going? What's next on your agenda? Okay, have a good time, see you later. And we just do our own thing. That's an H. That's two independent, okay? Two independent relationships, okay? Individuals doing their own things, and they touch base together rarely, if ever, okay? Now, what we're shooting for in a relationship is like this, an M. Okay. Now you should say, ah, oh, okay? This is ideal, okay? Is an interdependent relationship where both individuals stand on their own. They're able to stand on our own. Before God, you know when we die? We're going to be on our own, okay? And our faith, our relationship with God, we can stand on our own, but there is a strong bond that we have together, okay? And they're able to be strongly bound together, but also they have their own identities. Okay, thanks. Okay. Usually with immature people, I see codependent relationships where, you know, they just rush into a relationship really fast and they start doing everything together. They start even matching their clothes and all this stuff together. And really, a lot of that is unhealthy when you have two people. Maybe they're struggling. They, you know, in their deeper issues, they're struggling with being insecure or having their identity. So they put so much of their identity in that other person, even so much of their faith in Christ through that other person. Okay. One thing that I'm really thankful for with Nikki is that when we get into an argument, what I know about her is that she'll pray. She'll have a relationship. She has a relationship with God that's apart from me, so that she'll see things straight. No, just kidding. She'll realize she's, you know, there's certain things that she just needs to pray for me about, that she can, so she has to forgive me for. And I know that when we come back together, she's already worked it out with God, right? So that's the importance of an interdependent relationship. Also, mature relationships should strive to be more outward focused. First, mature relationships maintain proper orientation by orbiting around Jesus Christ. A lot of times when couples, they start dating, it's like, yeah, they're like goo goo gaga. They just rotate around each other, right? And everything revolves around them. But really, to maintain proper orientation, we have to be focused on Jesus Christ. It's like when you're, okay, I know, if you're like sailing or like back in the olden days when there's no compass, you know how people navigated and oriented themselves? They didn't orient themselves by what was around them. They oriented themselves by looking up, by looking at the stars. And because, at least from Earth's perspective, those things don't change. And so that's how they knew how to get from point A to point B, even if they got like swirled around in a hurricane or something like that. In the same way, we have to keep our orientation focused on Christ as the way that we get guided in the proper direction. Also, second, individuals involved in mature relationships keep their own personal ministries. And so even though, like, especially when dating relationships, there's still things that you guys do on your own that's healthy to do. Ministries, your people ministry, your word ministry, your prayer ministry. And those kinds of things that you have that you just keep on doing by yourself. Okay. And third, when together in public settings, mature couples focus on other people. That doesn't mean that you can never, like, have one-on-one time. Like, it's important to have one-on-one time, okay? Your dates should not always be, like, on hospitality team, okay? Or, like, okay, we're gonna serve together. That's our date, okay? No, have a real date. Do something together, okay? But it should also include, when you're in public settings, there should be times where you're including other people. And it's not just one-on-one, it's the entire group, right? And you're not making everyone else feel like third wheels. Second sub-point is dating relationships need external guidance and accountability. So, you know, in a community, in a biblical community, don't just be a couple in and of yourselves. You want to include the rest of the community. You want to be outward focused, okay? But also, you need healthy guidance and accountability from that community. First, look for a mentor who can help you determine whether to start a relationship or not. 2 Timothy 1:13 says, follow the pattern of the sound words that you have heard from me in the faith and love that are in Christ Jesus. And Paul says, look for this, follow my pattern, okay? It's not just my words, but follow what I do, okay? Not just what you hear from me, but what I actually do. My faith, my love for Jesus. Okay, look for someone who will be able to give you sound counsel and honest feedback. Okay, don't try to find that. This is what sometimes we do, maybe subconsciously, is we're going to find somebody who will just tell us what we want to hear. What we have to listen to is people who will give us honest feedback. Okay, that can be your pastor, like me. I'm happy to talk to you about this stuff. Please don't get me wrong. I enjoy talking to people about this stuff. It's actually really exciting. It always gets me excited when I, you know, when I hear about this stuff. And don't try to deny it when I ask you, so are you interested in anybody? No, Pastor, come on. Not me. Come on. If you're a human being, you have somebody you're thinking about, okay? Also, that mentor could act as a facilitator and can tell you where that other person is as well. So, for example, in our relationship, me and Nikki's, Pastor Seth and Christina were extremely helpful to move along our relationship and, you know, pausing, helping us to pause when we needed to pause and kind of giving us a push when we needed a push, especially because they knew us really well. Okay, Pastor Seth knew me really well, Christina knew Nikki really well, and just to have that, having that, it was really helpful. Secondly, have a mentor guide you through the complex process of a relationship. Hold on. Is this mine? Practically speaking, As you kind of have this idea of the end goal in mind, you can have somebody who will help you pace your relationship accordingly. You know, who gave me the guidance that, okay, you guys haven't gotten, for me and Nikki, we haven't gotten blessing from the blessing of your of her parents. You better slow it down, right? That's what he told me. So what does that mean? I think that you guys should think about maybe not seeing each other so often. And we wanted to see each other really badly, right? It's not like we were like ministry robots and we're like, yes, Nikki, I only want to see you two times a week and I'm too busy for that. Can we make it like, no, I wanted to spend time with her. But because of his counsel, he said 2 weeks was, I think that's a good idea. And we talked about it. We worked on it together. It really helped us pace our relationship, okay? And keep appropriate boundaries that we had. In most cases, when we're in a relationship, we're navigating through pretty new water, right? I mean, especially if it's leading towards marriage. I know that perhaps some people have experienced like really heart-wrenching relationships that have ended right before marriage or something like that. But in reality, most of us are going to be pretty new to the idea of being in a Christ-centered relationship that includes the community where you have like a mentor to guide you through. But that's really helpful. That's really helpful to help navigate you through. And in fact, it really increases the chances for success, okay, in all levels. It's success when that relationship works out and ends in marriage. It's a success perhaps even when it doesn't work out because it limits the damage that goes on, okay? Because if you're like all gung-ho, you go into it full on, you're emotionally attached, even physically attached, and you realize this isn't going to work out, you know when you have to break that up, it's going to be painful, okay? There's situations where maybe the same guy, same two guys like the same girl, or two girls like the same guy. If they're just to help navigate through that so it's not like terrible and it doesn't turn into like this contest, you know what? That kind of stuff like really ruins biblical community, right? When like, I think that guy likes her too. What should I do? Like, and then you're like always questioning and like, what is that guy doing? It's like really undermines biblical community. And so I think having these kinds of older mentors and figures like that can really help. Third, seek out accountability partners who will sharpen you. Besides a mentor, find one or two peers who will help keep you accountable on the day-to-day, okay? Remember, accountability partnership is like breathing. You got to exhale, so exhale your sin, and your struggles, and your worries, and who you like, and all this stuff. But inhale the truth together. Build up one another, okay? Couples should have friends on the outside to support their relationship, okay? So it's not just you do it in private and it's just you two. You have a group of friends that will support you, keep you accountable. That's the joy of, you know, when couples get married and that you come together on that wedding day. And it's not just like two people who are happy. It's the whole community that's happy, right? Because you're like, yes, I didn't think that you could do it, right? You're so ugly and you have no personality, but praise the Lord. Like God worked in you and you were able to get that girl. You know, that's like what you celebrate, okay? Any relationships that are done in secret is like a yellow flag turning red, okay? I mean, I've heard some silly things like, they're like, you know, the guy will be like telling the girl, you know, let's just keep this a secret. We want to honor Jesus together, so let's keep it a secret. What? You know what that guy's really thinking? Let's keep this a secret so that we can do whatever we want, right? And we could minimize the ramifications of it. And the consequences. That's like sinister, okay? Involve the community. Any relationship that's worth doing, you do it in community. Anything that's done in secret, it's like already there's something that's, okay, something's not right about this. Okay? Here's two last frequently asked questions. Number one, how do I handle myself if I'm interested in someone from my church or life group? Yeah, like that really happens. Of course it happens, okay? Number one, handle it with care. Handle it with care. You want to honor the biblical community, okay? So make sure that you're just not reckless about it. You're not always telling the first girl that you like in your life group, hey, let's meet together, let's talk. And because that ruins the community, right? That person's probably going to get freaked out if she doesn't like you. She's not going to want to come to life group anymore, okay? Also, consult with a trusted mentor for guidance. You know, when those feelings, this is what I tell people, if you've been on a missions project, this is what I tell you, right? I said, you know what, on a missions project, that person may be the ugliest, this is my spiel, that person may be the ugliest person in the world, but because you see them 24 hours a day, you're going to be like, oh, that guy's not that bad looking, right? It's because of the intense togetherness with that person. Like, you're going to start having feelings that might not, you know. So what I tell people is, you guys have those feelings. We're human beings. But when it comes up, make sure that you talk to the team leaders so that it doesn't ruin the ministry and the witness and the purpose of the project. Okay, it's the same thing for us. I think we just need the accountability and the guidance. Okay, from a trusted mentor. Also, make an honest assessment of yourself and that other person. Make sure that you look at yourself in the mirror and you really take an honest look at where you are and where that person is. And I'd say to honor the community. Oftentimes, one practical piece of advice is wait until your life group is over before you like try to do anything, because if you start like pairing off like in the middle of life group, like I don't know. It's not like a hard and fast rule, but that's sometimes advice that I will give to people, okay? Number two, what specific ways can brothers and sisters in Christ honor each other? Especially in this stage of life, your stage of single adulthood, we need to have social boundaries. That's how you honor one another, okay? There's certain things that you just shouldn't be doing anymore. Like, some of you guys may disagree with me, but I believe in this, okay? For example, now even sleeping in the same place together, right? I think that to have healthy social boundaries, adult men and adult women should be apart from each other. And something like sleeping. Sleeping is like an intimate thing, right? And like using the bathrooms, those kinds of things. There should be some clear boundaries so that it doesn't get mixed up. Sometimes we think that, oh, but they're just like whomever. But really, we don't know what that person is thinking about, okay? And so have clear healthy social boundaries with people. Also, treat each other like brothers and sisters in the same family. Until you get married and you start a relationship and you get married, we should all be treating each other like brothers and sisters in Christ. That means we honor one another. That doesn't mean like guys are like, ew, girls, gross, right? That's not how we treat our sister or how we should treat our sisters. We should be honoring them. We should be helping them and encouraging them and praying for them and things like that. But not like, you know, not when you like them. Like, you guys know the difference, right? Like sister and then you like them, right? Like, you would never think about that. If you have a sister, you know what I'm talking about. That's a gross thought, okay? That's how you should think about brother each other in Christ. Okay, last one. Don't pee on the tree. What I mean by that is be careful with whom you share your interests, okay? In a way that you honor one another is you don't just like freely share who you're interested in, right? A lot of times people will do that because, you know, like dogs, they pee on a tree or like so that no one else, they're claiming their territory, right? And so sometimes you'd be like, hey, let's share who we like, right? And we think like that's how we're going to get really deep with one another. And then you're like, but inside you're like, I'm going to tell them that I like this person so that no one else, I said it first, guys, right? So no one else, yeah, no right. That's what a lot of times happens, okay? Even in accountability relationships, we should be kind of careful about who we share, about what we share specifically about who we like. Because, you know, like I said, in our church, we have a small church. So there's like a lot of probability of overlap, okay? And then we have to be wise. I'm serious about this, okay? We have to be wise because, we have to honor one another, okay? That's why, like, having somebody on the outside or mentor or something like that is probably a better person to share specifically with than just random people, okay? All right. It's time for our Q&A, so Nikki, you want to come up here? We'll field some questions. Is Nikki here?
Yes.
Oh. Hey, she can. Hey. You know it's his birthday tomorrow? So. Whose birthday is it? Is there any questions, Tina?
Yes.
Okay.
This one is, they're a little bit similar, so I'll just kind of put it together. How do we wait when we've started to intensely been in contact with someone already, a guy or a girl? How do we draw back? What are some ways that we can take a step back? Should we stop talking to them? Similar lines was, what do we do when we are in an ambiguous relationship? So they're kind of similar.
I think it depends on like how far it's gone and what's been communicated. So, for example, I think like, and take it case by case, okay? So if that's happened, talk case by case, okay? But I'd say in general, let's say that it's already been communicated, like you guys are, you know, you like each other, et cetera, et cetera. But then you realize it's kind of moving fast or you're not sure about it. Then I think it has to be clearly communicated. Okay, maybe we should just try to put the brakes on this a little bit until we figure out whether this is what is really the will of God and something that we're ready for. And then stick to it, right? A lot of times when, you know, a guy and a girl, they like kind of cross those lines already. They're already attached. They already have expressed that they're interested in each other. Then they realize they're not ready. And so then they put a halt to it. At least they say it. They kind of resume acting like how they were before, okay? And so really, I would recommend being strict about keeping those boundaries until like you're ready to resume it again. And part of that communication is, when are we going to touch base again? After we pray, after you sort things out, when is a good time to talk about this again, you know? So at least you're not leaving the other person hanging. Now, let's say it's ambiguous and it's been never communicated. Like, you're not sure where that person stands or where you stand. Then I think that I think it's okay to like just kind of try to draw some boundaries, you know, whether it's communicating, time spent together. And I think, like, number one, we're not dumb, right? So we'll get this, we'll get the signals that maybe we should cool it, or maybe that person is not interested. And I think that the other person should kind of see those signals, okay, and honor them, you know, say, okay, we'll just cool it, and that person doesn't want to talk. And so at the risk of maybe, yeah, you might, that person might not, it might not work out. You might not be in a relationship with that person later. But taking that risk so that you can honor each other in that way, okay? Now, like I said, sometimes having a facilitator is helpful because then that person is can tell you, you know what, you should just move on because I don't think that person's interested. I think they're just really wanting to send you a signal that they're gonna drop it. They're not ready. Or if it's like, just pray about it, hold on to it loosely, and let's see what happens with it. So I think it is case by case, but generally that's what I would tell people. Sometimes I would say if it's like ambiguous, they're in a relationship. Sometimes like a defining the relationship moment, like a DTR, is necessary. But I think that would be not in all situations, just sometimes.
I think just to add to that, I think the main principle is really honoring your brother or your sister. And, you know, as human beings, we just, if we like someone, then we act upon it, you know, and there's signals that are given, and, you know, women have a sixth sense, and they kind of know when a guy's interested, and, but, you know, I think it's very dishonoring when a girl or a guy gives extra attention to this one, you know, person, because it's going to get that person emotionally attached, you know, and if you're not going to really be forthright with your feelings, then I think it's not really fair to the girl or to the guy. You know, it can go either way. To start this ambiguous relationship, and so I think it's really about like trying to. If you really care about that person, then you're going to really want to honor them and want, you know, what's best for them, and you don't want them to be all like torn up inside, not being able to concentrate on work or ministry or, you know, other things because they're so hung up over you. And so I would just really, I think it's like practicing self-control. I think it's really thinking about how can I best honor her or him, you know, and with my actions and words.
Yeah, isn't that like a good indicator of maturity or not? When you're able to be like, because I love you and I want to honor you as a brother or sister, I'm going to abstain from some things, even though I really want to do it, right? Sometimes in our selfishness, we try to justify, I just needed to talk to that person and clear the air because I care about. No, you don't care about them. You care about yourself, right? And so really sometimes when it gets down to it, it's like selfishly motivated actions like that.
Sorry, second question. How can I have a healthy relationship, which I hope will lead into marriage with the right view on sex, if I've already been exposed to it? P.S., she is a woman.
I think that the reality of our world is that we make mistakes, you know? And so I don't think that there's any sin in the world that is unredeemable by Christ. And so even if somebody has been, man or woman, they've been sexually active in the past, I think that there is room for redemption even in those situations. Now, there's going to be some consequences and things that you have to deal with, I think, and that you and even your spouse is going to have to deal with, because I think it should be something that's shared at the appropriate time, you know. But I don't think that should, you know, I think that it can be reclaimed, you know, something like the joy of sex inside marriage and enjoying it as a married couple can be something that's redeemable even by somebody who's made some mistakes in the past. And the reality is that in our society. There's been a lot of people who make mistakes, you know. And so, yeah, there's nothing that's unredeemable.
Since men are called to be the leader in the family, is it preferable then for women to seek men who are spiritually more mature or at least equally mature, or does it matter at all? Second question to that is it okay for a mature believer to date a new or a young believer?
From a woman's perspective, it is, I think it's helpful, it's very helpful to have, to like a guy who is spiritually more mature than you, because he's going to be leading your family and your relationship, and I think this person knows that from what they said in the question. And, you know, for me, I can really trust knowing that Pastor Andrew fears God and he, you know, honors God. I have a lot of trust in him, you know, and to lead our marriage and to lead our family in a Christ-centered manner. I can trust that when he's, if he's doubtful or if he has questions, that he'll go to, he'll find counsel from a older brother, you know, who he trusts. And so I think there's some kind of security, you know, when you know that this guy can lead you. And at the same time, I've known people who have married someone who may be equally mature, or maybe even not as mature as you. And I've seen those marriages work as well. You just have to, but it brings just some different challenges, you know? And so you're not gonna, you won't, maybe you can't expect your husband to initiate times of prayer together, or, you know, family times of prayer together. Or, you know, it might be you that, it might be the woman that's trying to say, oh, honey, get up, we need to go to church, you know, or things like that. And so, yeah, it just brings its different challenges. And not to say it's not, it doesn't work, because I've known, I have a close friend who is in that kind of marriage. It just, you know, is a different. Yeah.
I think that there's a difference between, for example, like a guy who has at least a track record of growth, who may not be, I mean, even how you gauge whether someone's mature or not, it's on a sliding scale, right? And so, but there's a difference between a guy who has a track record and is tested in his faith and someone who just doesn't have a pulse, right? And of course, that person is spiritually less mature than you, right? But that person probably doesn't have that much probability of, like, having any leadership because he's shown no, demonstrated nothing about it in the past. I'd say that it'd be more open. I'd be more open if that guy maybe was younger spiritually or maybe less mature, whatever that means. But at least he's done some things and he's shown some track record of growth and maturity and leadership, because that person at least, yeah, he's done it before, and I think he can grow into it, you know. And so I think that would be a little bit easier, you know, than a guy who's just never done anything, and you're just taking a long shot because he at least says he's a believer, but he's never done anything, you know. Is that right, Ezra?
Do you, as a married couple, anticipate sometimes the worst that could happen in your marriage? How do you both act towards those thinking? Do you ever anticipate or think about, like, the worst thing that could ever happen within your marriage? And how do you, what do you do with that?
You want to know the difference between me and Nikki? I'm an idealist and she's a pessimist. And so, like, for one time we went into a mall during Christmas time. And she drove in, we drove in, and we're like, she said this. We're never going to find a space in this mall. Parking space. And I started laughing because I said, you know what I was thinking? I was thinking, I hope we find a space in the mall to park, right? And so, I don't really think like that. I think that I know that when I know that there's going to be there's going to be difficulties that come in marriage. Like there's going to be seasons when I know, for example, I know it's going to be difficult when our parents pass away. I mean, that's inevitable, right? Our parents will pass away at some point in our lives. So, this might have to end real soon. And I think those are things that we have to be ready to go through, you know? I mean, I don't know. I don't sit there imagining like the worst case scenarios, you know? I mean, I think the worst thing is like something like divorce, but we just kind of made an agreement that's not really an option when in anything that we face. Before we got married, when we got married, we just resolved that's not an option, you know? That's not a back door in any situation. And of course, we know that there might be, but we're really like, that's not something that's, you know, that's an option for us.
I think even as a pessimist, I think thinking about the worst that could happen, I think that's just a very like unhealthy way to think, you know, because your marriage has to be built on trust and has to be built on, you know, knowing that you guys are going to work through things together and partner together. And so I think more like whatever that worst may be, we'll cross the bridge when it comes, if it comes, you know. But why dwell on thinking about the what ifs, you know, and when things like that, when it's not necessary?
How do you know if you are called into a life of singleness?
Well, there's two. I think there's two levels of this, okay? That person doesn't even want to use the word celibacy, right? It sounds like such an archaic term, like monkhood or something, right? But, right now, I'll tell you this. Let me look in the room for a second. Maybe with the exception of a couple people, but right now, you guys are all called to celibacy. Right now. That's what you are. You're not married. You're celibate, right? That's your calling for right now. I do think that some people, they will have a, you know, God will put it in their lives where they don't even want to get married. And I've met people like that. And there are some great people in history that have been like that. Jesus was like that, right? Paul. You don't want to automatically put yourself in those categories just because you feel that way, though. But, I mean, even now, I mean, 20th century, did you guys know, ever heard of John Stott? John Stott, great, very influential 20th century theologian, missions advocate. He was celibate. He died a few years ago, never married in his life, never felt the call to be married. But most people that probably will get married, or if you have the Bible says, Paul says, if you have a desire, like for a young man to have a desire, like even a sexual desire, then it's okay to get married, okay? And that's a legitimate way to fill that desire that you have, okay? And so for most of us, it will not be the case that we're called to singlehood. But the reality is that might happen. Even for people who don't want to be single, some of us might be single because we don't find a suitable person to marry. Both men and women, okay? So that will happen, but, I mean, that could happen. So does that answer the question? I think I just defined everything. But. Okay. Tina said it was okay, so.
Because there's so many questions. if somebody is frequently peeing on a tree or claiming someone, how should we respond in a godly way? And you also happen to like the person that they're peeing on or claiming.
Maybe we should not use that term. Mark your territory. Yeah, that's probably better. Well, I think definitely it's probably not the place of that person. If that person is also interested, it probably will not be that person's place to, like, talk about it, you know? I can see two options with this. I guess the first is if there's a mentor or somebody who's like in the picture, just a spiritual authority, I think it'd be helpful for that person to kind of like tell that other person, maybe you shouldn't be marking your territory like that. Like if you always talk about, I mean, I've known people like that. I've known guys that they're always telling people who they like. You know, like everybody, it's like the worst kept secret in the church, right? Because they're like, you know, in a moment, you know, I got to just tell you this. I'm interested in this person. Like, why are you telling everybody, right? So I think it's just helpful to have somebody kind of intervene and say, you know, I think this is something you should just keep between you and God and just pray about it, you know? I guess another option that I've seen work, and this is not for everybody, but let's say two people, they already know that, they know that each other, about each other, that they like the same person. And it might be worthwhile just to sit down, you know, man to man, woman to woman, and just say, hey, let's deal with this in an honorable way. We're not competing, right? It's not like it's a beauty pageant or something like that. It's let that person make a decision, and I want to honor you, I want to honor that person, and, you know, let's just handle it that way as mature people. Now, if it doesn't work out that way, then I think there's not much you can do about it as long as you honored God and that the community in that way. If maybe one person knows, like one person's always spilling the beans, like I like this person, but the other person, they like that same person, but that other person doesn't know. Is that clear? Do I need to diagram it? No? Okay. If that's, then it'd probably be wiser to maybe have like a third party, like a older brother, older sister, life group leader, pastor, something like that, kind of play the middle person.
Okay, next question. What is your view on financial separation from parents leading up to or after marriage? How obligated are we in terms of supporting them or meeting their expectations in regards to our financial capability?
I think that when a couple is at that point where they're talking about marriage and they're talking about finances and things, I think they have to have some really serious sit-down conversations with each other about those kinds of things about their parents. And it's probably not a one-time conversation either. It probably has to be worked over many iterations because it also has to be talked about with their parents. I think every family is different, so it's hard to like come up with a hard and fast rule or law about it, but I think there should be just some healthy distance, right? If there's over-dependence on parents for finances and those kinds of things, it's definitely not healthy. But there can be some balance with it, right? So just like that example with vacationing and we had to make some decisions about that, there's some times where we talked about it. We said, you know what? Our family member, they want to bless us. So we don't want to keep rejecting it either. We want to be a blessing, you know, and humbly accept their goodwill. And so sometimes it's, yeah, we'll join you guys and we want to do this with you. So I think it's like a work in progress all the time. Yeah, so what I mean is like you have to have some serious conversations with each other about how you want to deal with it, you know, and keep revisiting it, you know. So does that answer it?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. On behalf of your friend, you thank him. You're welcome. Friend.
Is there another question? Is there anything a single woman can do if there doesn't seem to be any prospects or potentials in their workplace or community or church? Any practical things?
You wanna answer? I think that I would always counsel a woman, do not compromise on your values and your convictions. Okay? I think some things are negotiable, and some things you may just have to surrender as things that you thought were values or convictions. And I think that's where you have to do a real heart check about that, you know? Because I would say that some things you should stick to, right? And other things maybe you have to be open to. So, for example, you know, like when internet dating just happened, you know? Or like, and, you know, people were like, no way, I'm not, that's like terrible, right? You shouldn't find your spouse on the internet, right? Well, actually, you know, you could be open to it. I think it's okay as long as there's some clear boundaries and you're not doing anything unhealthy. Maybe some of us feel really uncomfortable with, like, a matchmaker, you know? Like, not like a formal, like, I don't know, like, mistress-type woman who, like, matchmakes and stuff. But, like, you know, like, parents setting you up and those kinds of things. I think that those are okay as long as there are some clear expectations that are laid out. Like, I'm not going to, you know, date someone who's not a believer. I'm not going to, you know. So our parents might have different values, but I think it's okay to, you know, to be open to those things, you know. So I think sometimes we do need to think a little bit broader, you know.
And I think for, I mean, we know someone in that situation, and I think what I appreciate about this woman that I know, even though she's older and hasn't found someone yet, that she really, she doesn't like wallow in misery, you know, because of her situation, but she thrives, you know, in given her circumstances. So, you know, she doesn't walk around like, I'm single, you know, but she excels in her work and she maintains her friendships with girls. And so, you know, and girlfriends are awesome, right? You need those girl friendships to support you. And so just, you know, I would say, focusing on those and, you know, finding accountability so that you can share if it's a struggle for you. But, yeah, I mean, I think just knowing that God is, and I'm sure this person, whoever, you know, sent the question, knows all of this, right? That God is sovereign and he has perfect timing and he's in control. And so, yeah, but I would just say, you know, just given your circumstances, to not, you know, find yourself like saying woe is me, but to really try to thrive given what, you know, God has given you and where he's placed you.
And I think it's okay for people just to be honest, you know. Yeah, I want to be married, you know. That's okay to say. And still balance that with, you know, I'm going to just be doing what I'm doing, right? And I think actually that's what spiritual family is so good for. Because I don't know if, like, all of us realize it, but, yeah, spiritual family is so important. Because, you know, where you value, you have single friends, you have married friends, you have friends who are married with kids, you have divorced friends, you have friends who are single parents. I mean, I think that's what a spiritual family should be. And so we don't have to always feel like we're only complete when we're married, right? Because our completeness comes in Christ. Being married is a blessing, but there are also relationships that are there that can be fulfilling. Maybe not equally fulfilling as a marriage, but fulfilling. Okay? How about one last question? Is that okay?
Okay. There's a few, but...
You can do one of those. It's one question, but three parts.
They're all really separate. Have you ever experienced different... visions as husband and wife after getting married? So for Nikki as a wife, how do you deal when that happens, when you have different ideas or visions of how, what to do or how to go about something? Do you have to give up your vision to submit to your husband's leadership?
I guess that question is hard to answer because that's given that I have a different vision. And so I'm not exactly sure. Like,
Hold on.
Maybe it doesn't have to be like vision, but I think even just maybe differences. Just differences in ideas or what to do or... doesn't have to be like as big as a vision, I think.
Well, I think it helps that Pastor Andrew listens and he values my opinion. He'll ask me what I think. He'll communicate with me and let me know what he's thinking, you know, down the road, 5 years, this is what he was thinking. What do you think about that? And if I have a difference in opinion or a concern, then, you know, we have times where weekly where we kind of just share like what's going on, what we're thinking. And so that time is always open for me to share, like if I'm not happy with something or if I want to do something, but I feel like I can't. And I think it's really about open communication and also having a, you know, a future spouse that will listen to you and will really value you in what you're, what you're thinking. Recently I was talking to Pastor Andrew about what I was thinking, what I might be doing in the next, 5-10 years, and he gave me feedback. And so, I think it's just a issue of constant communication. Yeah. I don't know if that answers your question.
I also think that just maybe from the men's side, it's the part of the leadership is not like you always make the decision and it's unilateral, like take it or leave it, that's the decision. You're the only one that makes it, and you make it by yourself. I think a lot of it is discussion and communicating, even communicating early. So, for example, if I'm thinking about something maybe down the line, I'm not going to spring it on her like a week before the decision. I'm going to talk with her about it early on and often until we come to some consensus. And we pray about it, and we work through it together, we discuss, and then we figure it out together. I think that's part of it. And what we always recommend is if there's just something where you just cannot agree, then that's when the male headship comes into play and the wife can submit to it, you know? But we've actually never gotten to the point where that's, you know, we just disagreed and she's just submitted. There hasn't been a point where we just totally disagreed with one another on a certain issue or decision. So, but when that happens, the win-win is for the wife to submit, because if the husband was right, it reinforces and empowers his leadership, right? If the husband was wrong, then the next time he's going to listen to his wife more, right? So it's a win-win in the bigger picture, okay? That's always the advice that we give to people. Just for I think our kids are really, like, anxious. he wants to go to sleep. Why don't we do this? Can we just, let me just close out in prayer, and then we'll wrap it up. And if you do have more questions, feel free to ask me. You know, you can email me or you can talk to me anytime. But you know, like I said before last week, I think that this is important enough. It is important, and I want you guys to be in healthy relationships with each other and to get married and be in a good, have good foundations for it. So, you know, don't be surprised if I ask you, right? So who are you interested in or anything like that? Because I really want to help you and see God work in your lives in that way, okay?